actually gave an extra break to look at.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for attending our meeting of the Transportation and Transit Policy and Oversight Division. I'm Representative Hornstein. Welcome. And we're going to give Representative Davis, Representative Champion, Houseman, and Leader a gold star for being on time. And we're and oh, Hortman is here too. Okay, I didn't see her seated. And a gold star for being here on time and seated. We appreciate that, Representative Rosenthal. We have one item today, a very important one, and this has to deal with the MAC, the Metropolitan Airport Commission's long-term comprehensive plan update for the airport. And this is a very, very important issue, not only for the communities that surround the airport, but the state as a whole. This is a very important part of our economic engine. I don't have to tell you the changes that are taking place in the aviation industry. We have been buffeted by those as well. And as a transportation committee, I thought it was very important that we take a look at this plan. Normally, when the MAC comes to the legislature, if it's not about a specific bill, they give an oversight or an overview to the local government committee. But I found it a little troubling that as a transportation committee, we have not given, I think, aviation the attention perhaps that it deserves. We talk a lot about highways and transit and ports, but this is absolutely critical to our state, and I hope that people will have questions for both the MAC and some of the communities that are here that surround the airport, and community groups, I think, that will be testifying as well. So with that, members, I have a first item before we get to the MAC overview is that I've been working actually for a couple of years with members of the Minnesota Commission on Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing organization, and they have, I think, actually a good news story to report to us about a couple of years of work that they've done with the accessibility project at MSP. So they wanted a chance to share that story with us. And so we're going to hear from them first before we get to the Metropolitan Airports Commission. So with that, I'd like to call on our guests from the MCDHH, and welcome to our committee and welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. And please let us know who you are for our record.
I'm Steve Warren from the Metropolitan Airports Commission.
And I'm Cynthia Weitzel with MCDHH.
And Ms. Weitzel, you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for giving us time this afternoon. Thank you very much. First of all, I wanted to let you know about MCDHH, the commission. We are the principal agency here in the state advocating on behalf of deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing Minnesotans. We work to make sure that all of us have equal access to services, programs, and opportunities equal to what is provided for other Minnesotans. The commission was set up by members of the community, the deaf community, deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing community, back in 1985. So this year, we celebrated 25 years. We are a governor-appointed commission. We have 15 members. 8 are from around the state. They are appointed by an advisory committee from each region, plus 7 general members. All of the members on the committee, or on the commission, represent different parts of our community, including family advocates, professionals, and the like, who are from the deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing community. Some of you may know that Minnesota has about 10% of our population that is deaf or hard of hearing or deafblind, which is about 500,000 people here in Minnesota. nationally in the United States, 43 million Americans have disabilities. From those 43 million, 31 million have hearing loss. 1 out of 10 people have hearing loss. 1 out of 4 baby boomers, which is a number that's growing. And also, it's not on your paper, but I think it's very important to note that 1 in 4 U.S. veterans who have come back from service with hearing loss. 1 out of 3 by the time they're 65 have hearing loss. And when I say hearing loss, I mean that there is enough hearing loss to actually impact their lives, their relationships, their work, their daily life, and access. The rate of hearing loss between now and the next 40 years is expected to skyrocket. MCDHH, I'd like to explain what we do. We advocate for services and programs and opportunities to provide equal access. We advise the governor, the legislature, state agencies, and the courts on developing policies, programs, and services that impact the deaf and hard of hearing citizens. We make sure that when money is received from the federal and the state governments, that it's used appropriately. We recommend legislation to improve systems for deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing people, and to make sure that the legislation also focuses on the economy and improving their lives in terms of access. We coordinate with the state and local agencies to make sure that services for deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing Minnesotans are appropriate and that they have equal access. The results of all of this is that we've seen a history of improved access, increased access to health, increased employment, increased accountability and education, and increased general public access. Now I'm going to talk about the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. In the last several years, we've noticed several issues that needed to be addressed. People, such as missed flights at the airport because people couldn't hear audible announcements explaining changes in gait, those kinds of things were missed by deaf, hard of hearing, and deafblind individuals at the airport. Telephone access has also been an issue because the equipment is old-fashioned and often didn't work. And also, you know that anytime a person goes into the airport when it's busy, there's so much going on there that in a way we're all hard of hearing at the airport. So any improvements in terms of access for people who are deaf, deafblind, or hard of hearing are going to improve the access for all of the people who use the airport. The community here was concerned and frustrated and decided to put together a group. Who approached the board of the commission, asked for, and they agreed to set up a group to propose laws and rules for the federal and state to follow. The next thing that they're going to do is set up an advisory committee. They did set up an advisory group of deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing individuals who have been monitoring what's going on at the airport for the last 6 months in order to make recommendations. So after the 6-month audit, they were then making recommendations for improvements, and they went to the MAC in December of 2008 and made a presentation. And MAC listened and took the initiative to take leadership in this and said, you're right, there are issues that need to be addressed and resolved. So the commission, serving deaf, blind, and hard of hearing Minnesotans, and MAC agreed to work in partnership and had a plan to set up ways to improve access at the airport in the spirit of cooperation. And that partnership has gone on for the last 2 years. And I would like to thank the MAC for all the progress that has happened and for taking leadership and encouraging all of this. So now I would like to turn it over to Steve so that he can explain what those improvements have been. Thank you.
Thanks, Cynthia. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, kind of a fun picture here of MSP back in 1963. And I'd like to say that the Metropolitan Airports Commission has a long history of creating facilities that are accessible to and usable by all persons. This quote is found on one of our plaques in our general office building from 1964. So I felt like we've been kind of following a tradition at the MSP and in the Metropolitan Airports Commission at working with accessibility issues in the community. As Cynthia said, we've been working together somewhat informally for a few years, certainly knew each other, talked about issues, but I think things really took off starting in December 2008 when a Minnesota Commission of Deaf and Hard of Hearing representatives came to our commission meeting. They talked about issues with ADA and the Air Carriers Access Act, which was coming due and had some implementation requirements in May of last year. And the group suggested that we need to do better work as far as emergency alert devices go in the terminal, upgraded telecommunication systems, replacing the old TTY phones, video remote interpreting services, visual information systems, and basically some communication plans and training for not only MAC staff but concessionaires and the airlines. Well, what we did first was we wanted to look and see what had been going on at other airports, perhaps some good lessons to be learned. And this first picture is from San Francisco. And as a result of an ADA lawsuit a few years ago and a consent decree, San Francisco spent a few million dollars putting in a very extensive visual paging system as well as video remote stations through the terminal. And there were screens everywhere, and all pages were available up on these screens. This is a picture I took when I flew through San Francisco one time, and they've done an impressive job. This is a picture of Phoenix, and Phoenix went off, I'm going to say, kind of on their own and tried to address these issues with a visual paging system. However, they did not, by report, work with the community, the advocacy community, very well. And frankly, the units that they put in were not accessible to people in wheelchairs. So unfortunately, some of the work they did then was swallowed up in bad feelings and I believe even a lawsuit. Portland has had a very good system of visual paging in for a number of years. Philadelphia also is putting in a new flight information display system, and they're going to a visual paging system on their monitors as well. Even overseas, this is a meeting board area at Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. And again, all of these visual information systems help, but I'm going to suggest they're only as good as the screen that you are looking at. Well, the emergency notification aspect was something that was not going to be too hard to work with because we already had a project in line to make enhancements. Sprinkler systems, alarm systems, alerts with strobe lights, with different messages, and in fact, from working with Cynthia and the group, I think we've got some ideas to make it even a little bit better. We're replacing our TTY teletypewriter phones in the terminal with public access video phones. We've got one in right now. The picture on the right is at the Humphrey Terminal, and that's operating very well. We plan to put another one into our main mall area at the Lindbergh Terminal. And Cynthia may not want me to tell this story, but I'll tell it real quickly. She's been a big help, and as we got the PAV in over at the Humphrey, she wanted to go over and test it one day. She drove up in front of the terminal, looked like a quiet day. She saw who looked like a good security person, and she said, "It's okay if I leave my car here while I just run in." Well, the guy somehow gave her the okay, and he shouldn't have. But Cynthia was in, testing the PAV, connected up, everything was working pretty well. Well, in the meantime, our police department had surrounded that car, very concerned about a car left in front of the terminal. One of our officers recognized Cynthia over at the PAV, put two and two together, came up, tapped her on the shoulder, and anyway, she didn't get her car towed, and we realized, again, the value of a different type of paging system, because they were paging in the terminal for whoever left the car out front. Cynthia had no way of knowing that. Video remote interpreting. This is providing an interpreting service in the airport. Video remote interpreting stations have tended to be very expensive, large pieces of equipment, and as we talked about and looked at some of the issues out there, we thought, you know, with Skype and some of the communication systems that are just available off the internet right now, perhaps there was a less expensive but quality solution way to go. And in fact, we found one. We found an interpreting service that was available over the internet. We bought a laptop computer, purchase price of about $1,200. We put a deal together with the interpreting service, and we have this now with our travelers assistance group at the airport as a pilot. And if a member of the deaf community comes in and needs translation services, our folks in the airport know where to steer them. And with this computer, again, it's a face-to-face visual communication using American Sign Language and then verbal to the volunteers, so a three-way conversation can happen. But our big challenge was in visual information systems. How do we get from our paging office the right information to the right places? We were fortunate in that, like Philadelphia, we were starting a project looking at flight information display screens. And we realized that with the information and technology that we'd be using with this system, we had the ability to kind of add to the scope a little bit and take care of some of these issues. So in fact, somewhat of a complicated diagram, but this serves as our paging office. And all the information is going into what we're going to call a big black box of information. And from there, it's going to be sent out to the different areas, the different types of pages we need to the different areas. So we'll, of course, use our new flight information display information. Will we have a requested page for somebody that's hard of hearing, or when we have an emergency alert in the terminal, that information will go up on one of our flight screens. We've also partnered with our advertising contractor in the terminal, JC Deco, and they've got digital advertising in a number of places in the terminal, and they were also willing to have our requested pages and emergency pages come on electronically to their units throughout the terminal in Bag Claim and a number of them on the concourses in the mall area. And so we're going to be able to get emergency pages and requested pages onto these units. We've already worked with CNN, and we have somewhat of a complicated system to get a page on. But as you can see, there's a crawler at the bottom of this screen, which I took a picture during a page that we were doing. But we're also going to streamline this process again through our FID system and the black box. We're going to, in the next couple years, put digital directories in the terminal to help in wayfinding. And these digital directories will also be locations where paging will be available. Long term, when we're through with our flight information display project, a next phase is going to be gate information display systems. And this is a picture of a Delta gate that I took in Atlanta. And at the hub in Atlanta for Delta, when you're on a connecting flight, Delta knows the connections that are on that flight, and they have these screens at each one of the gates with the connecting information readily available. We will eventually go to this also at the MSP, but frankly, we won't be using these screens perhaps 20 minutes when a plane is deboarding, and we'll be able to use this for paging and other information later on. But this was solved the problem of what do you do when you're not by a screen. And we are the first airport in the world to do this that we know of. the normal type of paging that we do throughout the terminal. We can distribute it to different screens, but now we have a live website where this resides. It's available to all travelers. It's available to folks in the terminal right now with a smartphone, with a computer, and frankly, it's also available on devices for the blind. We've also been working with the American Federation of the Blind, and we wanted to make sure that this paging information was available for them as well. And right about this stage in the project, we realized that what we were doing was not only benefiting the deaf and hard of hearing community and the blind community, but all travelers. Very often, travelers think they hear a page. It may have been them, and then they're having to track it down. Did I get paged or not? In fact, probably about 10% of the calls to our paging office are requests to repeat a page. Now we're going to have that information out in the terminal, available well, to the savvy traveler who may want to have it on their smartphone, their BlackBerry. But again, we believe that we're the first in the world to do this. We frankly got it live right now in a pilot project. So you've got the contact information there. You could feel free at any time to get on your BlackBerry, put this browser in here, and you'll see what pages are going on at the airport right now. Cynthia is helping us on some of the format issues, and we'll be completely live on our own website by this summer. Communication and training was one of the issues that we need to do a better job at, and frankly, Cynthia helped us and took part in a customer service forum. We had representatives from all the airlines, our concessionaires, wheelchair pushers, all the groups at MSP, and we split up into three where we did some kind of on-site demonstrations about the challenges of being deaf or hard of hearing, the challenges of being blind, and the challenges of being in a wheelchair and having mobility and communication problems. So we're in an ongoing effort in this manner. But as I said before, we believe that when we're through with this project this summer, we're going to be the number one airport, not only in this country, but we believe in the world, for accessibility issues for the deaf and the hard of hearing. And the real plus is that it benefits everybody. I get to speak about this. I've gotten to partner with Cynthia and Mary and our group, but frankly, this was a broad involvement of all MAC staff. All of our departments were adding resources and support to this. What we did was we leveraged existing technology. Instead of perhaps a more expensive a system approach to it, we looked to add on to systems. We looked to use technology improvements that we knew that were out there today. This fit within our capital budgets and plans. We didn't have to go looking for any more money. Plus, it benefits all travelers at MSP. In fact, we were just last week noted as the tied for number two large airport in the United States, the J.D. Power survey, tied with Denver. And one of the notations was in part to improvements in accessibility. I think what I've enjoyed most is being somewhat project manager on this, though, is the partnership with MCDHH and taking a bunch of challenges and working together and developing, again, an airport that I believe is going to be number one in the world. That's a fun project to work on.
Thank you very much, Mr. Warren and Ms. Witzel. Do members have any questions, any thoughts or comments about anything they've heard? I thought it was important to see an example of, you know, a citizen group working with the airport here, and it's a constituency that we don't always hear from in the Transportation Committee, and I think it's important when we have 500,000 of our fellow Minnesotans that are impacted by this. Representative Houseman.
Mr. Chair, not on this particular group of individuals who've brought the accessibility issue, but on another feedback I've gotten for our airport, and I don't know if it's improved in the last year. Family members who, because of other family members who require accessibility or help, need the family restrooms. And a brother-in-law told me that we had fewer of them than most airports. He travels a lot and has gone through lots of airports, and he had to search far and wide, found one that was locked, and he thought that we had fewer than other major airports, if if a family member is required, spouse going in with their spouse. I don't know if that's still the case, but just one more feedback in terms of accessibility.
Mr. Warren, did you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, I would perhaps challenge that statement, but I can't say for sure. I do know that when we've ever gone through and remodeled a concourse or taken a certain area or developed new areas, we place family restrooms in proximity to not every male-female restroom, but quite a few. We've also got a family room, a couple of quiet seating areas for people that just want to rest and get away. And one of the things we did develop that I don't believe is done in very many places in the United States is we have a nursing mother's room that's available on request. And that's been used many times, and I appreciate doing that. But that's something that we will look into, and we're aware that there's some concerns in the community. We'll continue to look at that.
Okay. If there's no additional questions, I want to thank, Ms. Witzel and Mr. Warren for your comments and for coming to our committee. And what we'll do now, members, is transition into our conversation about the long-term plan for MSB. We can get into a lot of different issues. And I did want to also welcome to our committee Representative Beard. He's normally we see him at the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee, but I invited him specifically here today because he's been a leader bipartisanly on airport issues, whether it affects MSP or the other airports, not only in the region but throughout the state. He's kind of our airport expert in the legislature, and so welcome, Representative Beard. And I think he has also insights that we can benefit from too as well. So with that, I think we are going to have the way that I'd like to thank you very much. Thank you. I'd like to call on the representatives from the MAC first. And then it's my understanding we have a few municipal officials that perhaps would like to testify. And then we also have Mr. Saunders from the South Metro Airport Action Council. And hopefully we can get all of the testimony wrapped up by 2, a little after 2, and then have time for committee reactions and questions. So I kind of maybe budget about 15 minutes for the MAC and then another 10 to 15 for others. Maybe we could go a few minutes over on your presentation if you need that time. So.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hamill.
Yes, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Jeff Hamill, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and with me today is Dennis Probst, Deputy Executive Director for Planning and Environment. Yeah. Denny is responsible for all of the planning, construction, development, so forth, expansion, forecasting of programs, and he'll talk about the long-term comprehensive plan in more detail. Given your timeline of only having about 15 or 20 minutes, Mr. Probst is going to require almost all of that time. I hope to give you just a brief overview. Maybe I'll turn about 10 minutes into about 2 minutes if I can and turn it over to you.
And Mr. Hamill, again, these are guidelines. I'm not going to cut you off. I wanted enough opportunity for you to speak, to have others speak. And I wanted to, again, set aside the last 15 to half minutes to a half hour for the committee to respond. We'll get the testimony first and then the Q&A after.
Very good. Well, let me be brief and turn it to Mr. Probst. First of all, Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. The Metropolitan Airports Commission has been an organization that has been an important part of this community for many, many years. You became involved with the Airports Commission in 1943, some 67 years ago, when the state legislature created the Metropolitan Airports Commission and asked us to oversee the development and meet the community's needs for the operation of all of the airports in the 7-county metropolitan area. We have a board of 15 members, 13 members appointed by the governor of the state of Minnesota. They serve 4-year terms. Those are staggered terms so that they don't have all exit at the same time, but actually have consistency as various administrations move through the governor's office. One representative from the city of Minneapolis is occupied by the mayor. He has a representative that sits on the commission on his behalf, as well as the mayor of St. Paul. And the chairman of the commission, the 15th member, is appointed by the governor as the chair and serves at the pleasure of the chairman, of the governor, without a specified term. Our responsibility is to manage and operate the 7 airports in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area. The one that we're talking about today, and the most visible one, of course, is Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, which today ranks about the 13th or 14th largest airport in the United States and about the 23rd or 24th largest airport in the world. We also own and operate the St. Paul Downtown Airport, which is primarily what's called an intermediate airport. It's an airport designed to meet the needs of corporate and business aviation, so you see a good concentration of corporate jet activity at that airport, as well as other operators, but primarily it's a design for jet operations. And then we operate 5 other airports in the metro area. On the east side of St. Paul is the Lake Elmo Airport. To the north is the Anoka County Airport, the Crystal Airport in Crystal. In the western suburbs, the Flying Cloud Airport, and down south is Air Lake Airport in Lakeville. That's a 7 airport system of the MAC, and those airports all have specific responsibilities and roles to play. What we try to do is provide an airport for all types of users. We're trying to preserve MSP for large aircraft operations that require long runways to handle larger loads and heavier aircraft, air freight, air cargo, and passenger operations. St. Paul Downtown is a business airport, and the other airports are basically designed for single-engine propeller, twin-engine propeller, and light personnel and private jet aircraft operations to some limited degree. In the organic legislation that you passed in 1943, you basically assigned MAC the responsibility for developing an airport system to meet the growing needs of the metropolitan community. We think we've been quite successful in that regard, with some controversy associated with noise and other operational issues. But at the end of the day, the Metropolitan Airports Commission's operation at MSP contributes about $10 billion a year into the economy of the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota. That is the most economically viable piece of property in the state. We know of no other 3,000-acre piece of property that generates or contributes that much money to the economic vitality of the community. So it's important. In 1989, the legislature passed the Airport Planning Act. In that legislation, you directed us to take a look at the long-term future needs, taking a 30-year look forward at that point to 2020, and examine and ask the question, do we have aviation facilities and services capable of meeting the future growth and demand of our community? We started an airport planning process that became known as the dual-track airport planning process. The dual-track meant that we studied one track or one direction that basically looked at the possibility of developing an entirely new airport, replacing MSP someplace else in the metropolitan area. We did this in cooperation with the Metropolitan Council, who has responsibility for locating and identifying the roles of airports in our metropolitan community. And the MAC has responsibility for designing, developing, constructing, and operating an airport once it's been constructed. The second track on the dual track course was to take a look at MSP at its current site and ask the question, as we look toward forecasts and the growth of the airport, with the current site, could it be modified and expanded to meet the long-term needs and growth of the community? In 1996, the Airports Commission recommended to the legislature, and everyone concurred that the airport should stay where it was and where it is today, because we had the ability to expand the capacity of the current airport at its current site. And as a result, in 1996, we began construction on a $3.2 billion expansion program and have added significant improvements to the airport to meet future needs. This ongoing planning process is one that needs to be reviewed every 5 years. We have missed a few of those 5-year lapses because of the extensive construction of the last decade or so. But since 1996, we have done the following. Realigned the inbound-outbound roadway to the airport, added onto the airport the A, B, and C concourses, which are on the right side of the inbound roadway as you come into the airport. We have developed the Humphrey Terminal Building. We've more than doubled the parking capacity at Humphrey and at Lindbergh Terminal Buildings at the airport. We have constructed the underground tunneling work and stations at the airport supporting the light rail transit system. We actually drilled the tunnels and built the underground station at Lindbergh and the on-grade station at the Humphrey Terminal Building. And we built a new 8,000-foot north-south runway on the west side of the airport. With these improvements, the airport is now positioned to meet all of the projected growth demands through the year 2020-2025. So we've made substantial progress, we've had good cooperation, and we've basically been able to work with the communities overall in trying to cooperatively work on a program of expanding the airport and trying to minimize or limit environmental exposure and negative impacts. We're here today to let Denny Probst talk with you about the next phase, the long-term comprehensive plan for the airport, looking forward to the year 2030. I'm going to stop talking because I think the details are more important for you to understand from his presentation as to what we're looking at as the future development of the airport, what we see this airport moving toward in the foreseeable future. So with that, Mr. Chairman, let me turn it to Mr. Probst.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hamill. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Probst, and also state your name for the record.
All right. Dennis Probst. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for Planning and Environment for the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for allowing us today to walk you through this update of the long-term plan for MSP. I'm going to start here, this initial slide that you're seeing, and I'm not sure if it'll be easier for you to follow it on the handout that you have, which is identical to all the slides that I'm going to go through or on the screens. But this initial slide is the current official plan for MSP, and the fundamental driver behind us undertaking this update to the plan right now is that this is not where we're headed with future improvements at the airport. And just to walk you through it real quickly, this is the plan that came out of the 1996 dual track effort that Jeff was just referencing. And it proposed at that time that there be a new terminal over on the west side of the field off of Highway 62 in the crosstown. It had a major reconstruction of the Lindbergh terminal, demolition of all the existing parking ramps and construction of new ramps, an underground people mover that ran across the airport connecting all of those new facilities. And in part, the logic behind that concept at that time was the maintenance facilities, the old Northwest maintenance facilities that we refer to as Building B. It's the, when you're leaving the airport, it was the old built, the hangars on the right side of the road as you left. That maintenance function was considered to be inviolate back in 1996. No one could comprehend Northwest doing anything but continuing maintenance there. Obviously, the industry has changed dramatically over the course of the last 9 years. And the concept that you're going to see here momentarily was actually looked at back during that dual track effort, but was discarded for that reason. So again, our fundamental notion behind doing this is to get a plan in place that actually represents where we think we're going with the development at the airport. The initial step we undertook was a forecasting effort to look at passenger activity and airport operations, the number of landings and takeoffs that occur at MSP. And the good news, we believe, for the next 20 years is that while we ended 2009 with about 32.5 million people coming through the airport, we are expecting, based on the forecast, to have something in excess of 56 million people coming through the airport in 2030. And that will point us, and I'll touch on some of these issues as I go through the particular phases, but the question that was raised earlier about restrooms, we're going to have some significant issues to deal with that are as mundane as seating and restroom capacity for that volume of people using the facility. The other part that we looked at was operations, and we are we finished 2009 with about 432,000 operations at the airport. That's the number of takeoffs and landings that occurred at MSP. That is actually well below the peak year for operations at Minneapolis St. Paul was 2005, where we had 542,000 operations. We have dropped more than 120,000 operations since that time. We've basically been, over the last 5 years, on a steady decline, both in terms of operations and passengers. The good news is that the decline in operations has been greater than the decline in passengers. And part of what allows Minneapolis St. Paul to we believe function very adequately at least out until 2030 is that we are seeing higher load factors and larger aircraft being operated by the airlines. When we developed the 2010 plan, which has now been implemented, the design standard that we established with the airlines was 65% seating in the gate hold rooms. And if you've been out in the airport recently, you may have had the unfortunate experience of not finding a seat. And the reason that you couldn't was that those gate hold areas were deliberately designed 10 years ago to have 65% of the seats of the expected aircraft that was going to be parked at the gate. Today, the airlines are routinely flying north of 80% load factors and are trying to push that number higher. So we're seeing more people on each aircraft, and in general, the aircraft sizes are getting larger. Not that we're seeing a lot of 747s come in here, but the regional jets are now, instead of being 35 or 50 seat aircraft, are 76 seat aircraft. So we're seeing more people carried and fewer airplanes. In fact, we're not anticipating, based on the forecast, to get back to those peak operations until probably 2019 or 2020. And we expect to get back to the peak passenger levels, which were also in 2005, a little over 37.5 million people in about 2013. So we're expecting passenger recovery to come more quickly than operations recovery. The graphic that's in front of you at the moment is an accumulation of all the improvements that we anticipate over the next 20 years. And I'm going to go through a series of block diagrams that cover the four or five-year increments of that period here. And then we'll come back to this cumulative diagram. The two things I would point out on here, which will not show up as well on the individual diagrams, is that Post Road, which is, for those of you, Post Road is, and we will be looking at it as a potential primary access into the Humphrey Terminal and 34th Avenue as the primary exit. And the issue behind that, frankly, is the capacity of the interchange at 34th and 494. So we think there are some opportunities there. Another issue that I'll be talking about in the later pieces of the forecast is the Jeff mentioned that we've already rebuilt the inbound outbound roadway once. We may be doing it again here in the next 20 years if we're successful in building a cross taxiway between the two parallels. And to do that, we need to lower the inbound and outbound roadway. The other thing I would point out in this diagram is that the blue boxes you see, with the exception of the pieces that are on top of Highway 5 and 494, are essentially the remaining development sites that we have at the airport. And we are very protective of them because we have very limited real estate out there. As a comparison, the new Denver airport, which is roughly the same size as MSP in terms of operations and passengers, has 33,000 acres to deal with to solve their issues there. We have 3,300, so we're one-tenth the size in terms of land mass. So we do have some challenges in that regard. With that, let me walk you quickly through the five-year blocks of improvements here as we go forward. And the first major piece of redevelopment of MSP, or modifications, if you will, we expect to happen at the Humphrey Terminal. And we are proposing, based on the forecasts, and if the industry does not return, these will all be demand-driven. We're not going to go out and build it and hope people will come. But on the basis that our forecasts are correct, we think we need these facilities in about May of 2015. So in the next 5 years, the intention is to add 17 gates, the two yellow blocks that you see on here on either side of the brown block in the middle. That brown piece is the existing Humphrey Terminal, which is also illustrating the Skyway connection out to LRT, which is currently under construction. But we anticipate adding 17 gates to accommodate all of the carriers, the non-Sky team, Delta and their partners, who are currently on the E-Concourse, would be moving over to Humphrey at that time, as well as providing some expansion for those carriers and the folks who are currently at Humphrey. In the dashed block that you see behind the terminal, you'll note that there is, if you're have flown out of Humphrey, there's currently four international gates. We look to add one additional one to deal with the capacity that we think we're going to need. And the blue and the green blocks are the addition of auto rental facilities at Humphrey. And these will be, frankly, quite expensive. And we anticipate when we build them that we will also build parking above them. Not that we need the parking immediately, but we will ultimately. And the cost of building that parking after the fact will be quite significant, plus it would require us to close down those auto rental facilities to do it. So there will be kind of a package put together there. And the reason I'm kind of making a little bit of a big deal about this is that several years ago, we looked at doing what's called a consolidated auto rental facility at the airport. And if you've traveled to any of the large hubs around the country, Conrax, which is what they're referred to, are all the rage. But in other locations, Dallas, for example, they have a 250-acre site that is where the auto rental operation is. We don't have anything even approaching that size here, so anything we would do would have to be done in structure. And the evaluation 4 or 5 years ago suggested that we were looking at something in the range of $300 million to do that. We think today it's probably closer to $400 or $500 million. We think by keeping the auto rental companies in the two parking ramps at Humphrey and Lindbergh, not only can we do it less expensively, we're anticipating something in the range of $100 million, but we also believe that we will retain what we believe is the most convenient auto rental operation at any major airport in the U.S., and we think that's important for our passengers. You also see a yellow line across the upper left-hand corner there. That is a piece of taxiway that would be built to accommodate movements over and around Humphrey Terminal. In Phase 2, the 2015 to 2020 timeframe, there will be some improvements very early in that period and then major improvements which will follow. On the left-hand side of the diagram, you see some notes and arrows pointing to the existing building. When the other carriers leave the e-concourse, we anticipate going in there and remodeling that portion of the building. It's the last concourse that really hasn't been touched out there. And the reason we haven't been able to deal with it has been there's the ability to move folks around to vacate some space to make it available for remodeling. We also anticipate at that time that we would be able to go into the ticket lobby and do some reworking of the ticket lobby to hopefully improve the function there, as well as one of the features we anticipate is consolidation of the TSA checkpoints. Today there are 6 checkpoints with 16 lanes. We are anticipating going to probably 2 with 8 or more lanes each to improve the efficiency of that operations and hopefully move people through more quickly, as well to go in and remodel the baggage claim area at the lower level of the concourse. That part of the building literally is the last part of the 1962 facility that I think the only improvements it's had is new carpet and paint, and it clearly is in need of some assistance. So we hope to be able to deal with that in the summer of 2015. The other more significant improvements in terms of kind of what's going to happen to the building facilities there is we do expect by the end of that period, so by 2020, to have an expansion of the G concourse in place. That's the yellow block that you see here, as well as additional parking facilities are expected to be needed by that time. That extension of the G concourse would include a new people mover similar to the one that's on the C concourse, although probably running on the air side of the concourse, not the land side, that would facilitate passengers moving up and down that entire concourse. And one of the major features that we think is important to this addition to the building, those of you who've traveled internationally have undoubtedly been through our international arrivals facility. It is not the finest piece of terminal that we have out there, and we have in the past looked at trying to expand in that location. And frankly, our concern is that if we do that, we have to do it under traffic, and when we get done, we still have a less than desirable facility. So the notion now is that we would build the new G gates and build a new international arrivals facility as part of that function. So all of these new gates could operate either as an international gate or a domestic gate as needed, whereas today they basically operate one way or the other until they've been cleared. Also, the magenta lines that you see are purple lines off to the right side of the screen there are the de-icing pads that we need to maintain operations. And you'll see in these graphics as we go through, they move around until they get to their final home as we complete the build-out, but we do need to maintain that capacity as we go forward with the improvements. In the next 5-year block, we expect to see improvements at both Lindbergh and Humphrey. The next piece at Humphrey would be an additional, we're anticipating at least at this time, 9-gate expansion with a third Skyway connector into the terminal to maintain what we believe is the convenience of that facility today. We want to maintain that going forward. And there's actually enough real estate out in the area of that proposed addition that if we had an airline or airlines that wanted a little unit terminal there with separate ticketing and baggage claim, we have the real estate to be able to do that. The other two colored blocks that you see there would be the final addition of parking over here at the Humphrey Terminal to help us match up with the needs that are expected by that time. During that same 5-year window, the final expansion of the G concourse is proposed, and we anticipate at that time building a second connector between the G concourse and over to the ABC to continue to hopefully make the terminal building as convenient as it possibly can be. The red crosshatch area you'll see there is the demolition of what is left of Building B. That needs to be gone before we can do this final piece of expansion. You'll also see a blue block on there, which is a hotel that we covet. The anticipation is that would be done by a third-party developer at such time as someone is willing to come in and build and operate a hotel at the airport. We would have some difficulty if they showed up tomorrow providing this particular site, but we think this is the right location for it in terms of its function and convenience for people using it and the terminal. The other heavy dark line work that you see on there is the replacement of the inbound-outbound roadway. And you'll see in the next slide that we are proposing in this final phase, there are really only two major features, and that is a final piece of parking expansion in the area where the existing post office is and extending the people mover that serves parking and auto rental out to that location. and the completion of the cross taxiway and the de-icing pads then being located in between the parallel taxiways. And Mr. Chair, one final point here, the cost estimates, we've done some ranges here, and to save you the trouble of adding up the math, the range, if you do the total over the 20-year period, is somewhere between $2 and $2.4 billion of additional improvements at MSP. And with that, coming back to the preferred alternative, this is currently in, has been in front of our commission. We have completed 22 meetings with communities and their staff. We've done 4 public meetings. This has been in front of our commission several times. We've been in front of the Met Council, and our formal public comment period closed last Friday. We did receive comments from a number of the communities surrounding the airport, and there were essentially 3 themes, if you will, that were fairly consistent across those comments. And the concerns from the community were capacity in 2030. Do we really have enough going forward beyond that? Noise concerns and issues with the roadway or concerns whether there's enough capacity to get those 56 million people into the airport. We will look at those as we go forward, but I would offer that at this point in time, we have not chosen to look at some of those in more detail because, frankly, over the last 5 years, we've been on a declining level of activity, and until we see some evidence of that turning around, we think it's imprudent to be spending a great deal of money on those efforts. And that, Mr. Chair, unless there are questions, I will end my question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ropes. I think what I'd like to do is I see we have the mayor of Minneapolis and some other municipal officials here. I'd like them to testify, and then I think there's one other testifier, Mr. Saunders, and then maybe around 10 after 2, we can 10 after 2, 2:15, have at least the last part of the hearing dedicated to any questions and answers that the committee would have of any of the testifiers. So with that, I don't know, would the mayor like to step up? I think Mr. Councilmember Quincy as well. Good. Okay. Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Mayor, for coming. And just so the members of the committee know, before Mayor Ryback was mayor of Minneapolis, he was very, very involved in this issue, and I think has remained very committed to it, and has been a wonderful spokesperson for not only my district, but I think a lot of the communities that have been impacted by the airport over many, many years. So very honored to have you, Mayor, and welcome to the committee.
Excuse me. It's an honor to be here, Mr. Chair, and I do have to chuckle a little bit at you and I 15 years ago dealing with these issues now being in this position.
Right.
Quite nice. We had no gray hair at that time. I hope we'll be able to address these before.
At least you have hair, Mr. Mayor.
I'm catching up fast. Believe me. I'm here with Councilmember John Quincy. Councilmember Elizabeth Glidden has joined us as well. I wanted to, if I could, raise several more strategic issues, and Councilmember Quincy will also address some of the sound issues. Before we get into any of those, two very quick points. As you know, we've worked on these issues for many years. I happen to think that we are in exceptionally good hands with the team you just heard from who manages the airport. I happen to want us to look at a much broader perspective on this, but we happen to be fortunate to have them in these hands. A second small point before I move on. Is the fact that as we look at this airport and these grounds, I do think we have a golden opportunity in the Fort Snelling Post, which sits right next to the airport. If we look at opportunities for a hotel, for instance, or others, there is the possibility to use the expansion there to move forward the restoration of some extraordinary buildings that at this point have no future. The larger issues I wanted to deal with, however, would be the issue that I believe we are now at the right time and far past the time, in fact, when we should be looking much more broadly at this issue and to look at a statewide aviation strategy that really recognizes that the plan you're hearing about puts us at near capacity in 20 years, and knowing that it takes 20 to 30 years to site a new airport, we are absolutely at the point at which we should be asking those big issues. I believe there is a win-win here that has a statewide aviation strategy that diffuses air travel throughout a broader part of the state that increases economic development in greater Minnesota, as well as makes us more competitive. To get to that, I'll do a very quick history of time. As you mentioned, we've been working on these issues in the mid-90s, and at that time, when the discussion went forward about expanding this airport, there were many of us who argued that what we should be doing is looking at a new airport that had much larger capacity, that did not put as much traffic over densely populated areas, And we argued at the time that by the time we reached capacity, it would be cheaper to build a new one than to expand at the current site. As you just heard, we're talking about a $2-plus billion project here. If we add those numbers up, they come to about $5 billion on expansion at this airport. And in fact, that was is more than the cost of the new airport at that time. We, in fact, I believe, did make a wrong strategic decision and should have been looking more long-term at capacity. The issue, however, is now, what do we do at this point? Well, let's look at a couple of the key issues that you see in this. If you look at some of the capacity issues that we're looking for here, the project calls for us to be at what we understand to be about 630,000 operations by 2030, which would put this this airport at 98.5% capacity at 2030. Now, the Met Council's, the FAA's order 5090.3 really says that airport strategy planning should begin when airports are at 65 to 75% capacity. We hit that, by the way, in 2008. We can obviously expect to hit that again very quickly. It is time right now for us to begin moving forward. Now, under this planning, the airport operators have said that new generation technology will be able to address some of these capacity issues. Those are quite unproven technologies, but if they are, they present a very different set of patterns that could create many other issues. What that basically means is new technology means we can fly more airplanes in faster, putting more capacity over already overburdened neighborhoods, but more important, clearly opening up the idea that you no longer have to fly in a straight line. And so areas that now have no airport noise, Highland Park would be a very good example, would now suddenly be very much within that area. Even that being said, we know we are at capacity, and it's time for us to begin planning on this. The congestion estimates in this plan state that by 2030, the average delay per aircraft operation will be 10 minutes. Now, the Met Council's own benchmark for airport delay is 7.1 minutes. So if we are coming up with a plan that says we're going to have delays beyond the acceptable level, something has to give here. What we also need to recognize is the infrastructure investment that we're talking about here puts us in a real box. That if we are expanding at this airport and not looking at the bigger picture, we are creating, I believe, a lose-lose. More capacity over densely populated areas. Councilmember Quincy will address some of those capacity issues, recognizing also that the solution for those is simply to insulate homes. As you remember, when that insulation promise that the airport commission made to citizens was not followed through, there was a lawsuit involved. It was a $130 million lawsuit. You'll be looking at much more of that. As a person whose house would be mitigated as part of that, I think that's bad public policy. A public policy should not be trying to mitigate pollution. Our public policy should be to look for the win-win. Here's what I believe the win-win to be, and it's a point that I've made to this body for many years now. And it's the fact that we should no longer be looking at planning the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. This state should have an aviation policy. More than 90% of our air travel comes into Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. That creates not only congestion and also has us shipping much more of our cargo than other competitive metropolitan areas have. It also puts us at a point where economic development is concentrated within the metropolitan area. Think about a different future. It's one that we've talked about before, in which there would be a multiple airport strategy, connected perhaps by high-speed rail to airports in St. Cloud and Rochester, looking at the futures of places like the Wilmer Airport and many others across the state. The reason we often don't get into that is because the financial incentives behind it, the great team that you see behind me, is compensated solely for the airport that we call MSP. If we really took all those user fees and the very large fees that all of us as Minnesotans pay as we go to park or to shop or the airlines pay for gate revenue there, if we put that into a larger pool, we'd be asking the deeper questions. How do we make sure aviation serves those people in the northern suburbs or the southern suburbs? More importantly, how does aviation lift the economic development in other parts of the state? A statewide aviation board would be asking those questions. As we look at high speed to Duluth, as we look at what we're doing to Chicago, the idea of connecting airports is critically important. So what we ask you to do is to take this point, which, by the way, is far past the time we should have asked this question, but to take this point to stand back and look at a plan that calls for us to be over capacity, to be facing multi-million dollar mitigation issues, and instead look to a win-win that would spread economic development around this state and also be a much more prudent economic policy for the state. And with that, I want to, if I could, Mr. Chair, turn it over to Councilmember Quincy.
Thank you very much, Mayor Rybak, and welcome to the committee, Councilmember Quincy, from the 11th Ward in Minneapolis, which, for those of you who aren't familiar with the geography, it's just to the northwest of MSP and one of the more noise-impacted wards in our city. So welcome to the committee.
Certainly.
State your name for the record as well.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Hornstein. My name is John Quincy. And as you just described, I am a city council member for the 11th Ward in Minneapolis. I've been a longtime resident of the ward and have been following airport noise issues for about 15 years. The noise mitigation program and its fulfillment on the promises made to date have been and remain a very high priority for myself and for my constituent neighbors. I think the mayor did an excellent job of addressing several of the concerns that the city has with the long-term comprehensive plan, including the airport capacity issue, congestion, and infrastructure investment. I'd like to focus a little bit more on one of our, I think, our greatest concern, that being the impact on noise, specifically a failure in the plan to really adequately address mitigation efforts and plans. As MAC continues to grow the airport, and with all likelihood that noise impacts are going to continue to be a significant annoyance to residents and have an impact on the livability of our communities, mitigation plans must be addressed in the long-term comprehensive plan. And we're disappointed that, once again, MSP is proposed to be expanded, increasing the negative impacts on our neighboring communities and making no attempt to address those mitigation efforts. Noise impacts associated with forecasted growth increases the number of single-family homes that will experience noise levels between 60 and 64 by more than 5,600 homes and 3,100 multifamily dwelling units. 3,600 of those single-family homes are in Minneapolis, and over 1,500 of the multifamily units are in Minneapolis. Homes affected by this level of noise impacts are currently being mitigated by MAC as a result of the litigation that the mayor just described and that you're well aware of. Our questions, I guess, would be why would homes propose to experience the same noise levels with these expansion not receive those same noise mitigation efforts? Noise mitigation costs for these houses would be approximately $87 million, and that would represent about 5% of the overall project cost. And we believe that that would be an essential and reasonable cost of doing business and should be included in the long-term plan.
Thank you very much. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The mayor mentioned connecting airports, but I wonder if we shouldn't also have a conversation about, in that aviation strategy, switching modes. In other words, some have suggested that for shorter intercity travel, somewhere between 200 and 500 or up to 200 or up to 500, that we would move away from air travel and use rail. And the arguments are environmental and energy and congestion and airline economics and airline service issues and security issues, that for so many reasons, shifting modes is what states ought to be talking about. And I wonder if you could comment a bit on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I feel like a poodle in the back of a car. My head is nodding so quickly. Yes, I 100% agree with your point. And while my numbers aren't exactly up to speed, I certainly remember that an extraordinarily large percentage of the operations out of MSP are Minneapolis to Chicago. Your advocacy for high-speed rail and your work on Union Depot, I think, are really great examples of how we have to just get out of the box of thinking on all of this. We are looking at the idea of moving people and freight throughout all parts of the world in multiple modes, and we have that opportunity now. I think when Representative Hornstein and I were fighting this many years ago and we began talking about high-speed rail, that was considered a cute little idea that wasn't going to happen. we are in a radically different, and I believe far better, world right now, whereas you obviously know and the rest of us know, the federal government is rapidly looking at that. If we move very quickly on that, and if we demonstrate to those who are making the choices about where high-speed rail investments are made, that we're looking at this not just as a rail issue, but as an issue of changing from one mode to the other, we can make dramatic impacts on our ability to get that funding, on our ability to have an impact on climate issues, and our economic competitiveness. I mean, stop and think about the disadvantage our businesses are at because we are trucking so much of our cargo to Chicago. Stop and think about our businesses that need to have access to other flights. Recognize the fact that the traditional hub-and-spoke strategy for aviation may be breaking down, and it's much more possible to have a person fly from Detroit to Duluth, but the person in Duluth to then have a trip that brings them to the Union Depot or into Minneapolis. These are exciting options, but we're looking at this through a very narrow prism at the one time when we should be opening it up.
Thank you. I know that the mayor has a pretty tight schedule, so we will have some questions maybe if, of this municipal panel now, if we can do that. So Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Ryback, just real quickly, I'm intrigued by your suggestion to use, basically decentralize the airport system and to use Greater Minnesota. I know you've driven out there. You've seen that big flat area between Litchfield and Darwin. And we can visualize someday, taking the Little Crow line out to Twinball International Airport, and so again, just intrigued by those suggestions.
TBI on the baggage hand check, isn't it?
Representative Hornstein, Representative Erdahl, I remember our trip there. I remember your advocacy for that, and every time I look at that rail line, I think about that point. These are the questions we should be asking. But if you put this issue up against the economic development issues that we have, and look at Greater Minnesota, and look at where economic growth is not happening, and then you look at the point that 97% of the operations in the state, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, in the 90s, go into MSP, something's wrong with this picture. We have a win-win, and that's what I'm asking us to do.
Thank you, Mayor. Any other questions? Yes,
I have
Representative
comments,
Mason.
So I don't, do you want to take that right now? Or?
Sure, Representative Mason, please.
Two things. One, during the 90s, I happened to be sitting on the Eagan City Council, so obviously I was aware of a lot of issues. One is, and I thought the final legislation dealing with the dual track and not allowing for any land banking was really short-sighted. Two, the thing is, when you're talking noise mitigation, I have a lot of people in my district that are in that area. It's fine if they stay in their houses, but the problem is they can't go outside in the summer. So I have some issues with how much you can do with mitigation. Third, also, there was, I can't remember the name of the organization that dealt with freight, but I remember a lot of the freight companies at that point were going into Chicago just because they couldn't get in and out of our airports here. So, I mean, this, we have some substantial issues to deal with. And, again, going back to doing a greater or statewide policy makes absolute sense to me.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Are there any other committee members that have questions of our Minneapolis guests here? And I don't know if there's other municipal officials that wanted to quickly testify. Are there anyone else from any other? I know that they were contacted. So, okay. With that, thank you very much, Mayor Ryback, Councilmember Quincy. And we have one last person that is signed up to testify. And Mr. Saunders has also distributed some longer comments to us. So there are encapsulated form. So, Mr. Saunders, we're running a little behind. I don't know if you can keep it to about 5 minutes or so, and then we'll conclude the hearing with Q&A for you and our MAC people that are here. So, welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dick Saunders. I'm vice president of a citizen-based organization called SMAC, or South Metro Airport Action Council. We've been in existence for 40 years, since the advent of jet traffic here in the mid-70s. And we're influential in encouraging noise mitigation for homes and consideration of the Dakota County alternative airport site. We represent effectively citizens of maybe numbering 750,000 to 1 million people in the city and suburbs surrounding the airport, and try to keep a close eye on MAC operations to try to ensure safe, efficient, and environmentally responsible activities generated at the airport. We've looked rather carefully at the 20-year plan, and I'll give you just a couple of major concerns in summary. They're a little bit different than the written comments that I passed out a minute ago. Fundamentally, we believe that there are a great number of unknowns, of variables, of factors that are beyond the immediate control of MAC in projecting activities as far out as 2030. Therefore, we believe, and I'll enumerate some of them in a minute. So in essence, we believe that this outlook or forecast should be rather carefully limited to the first five-year increment, because there are still great uncertainties as to a recovery in the economy, the rate of that recovery, some of the other unknowns include the rather fragile financial condition of almost every airline serving MSP, and that's been due to some unusual and unpredicted factors in the last 10 years. The fact that we may see the prospect of return of $100 or higher oil over time, and that is a very critical point for airlines to be able to operate efficiently, because fuel is now their major expense. And so the industry has taken out 20% of its seating capacity over the last 5 years, and we're not sure that trend is over yet. We could well see further consolidation among some of the big carriers, or maybe between some of the big and some of the regional carriers over 20 years. There are also likely in the mix of uncertainties changes in airline route structures as population growth and trends and industrial trends change within the market here and in other markets that we compete against. Changes in the fleet mix themselves, as Mr. Probst and Mr. Hamill said, we're seeing larger regional aircraft replacing the bigger wide-body aircraft, and that's good in the sense that they tend to have lower noise emission levels from the standpoint of a resident. Other wild cards include the rising popularity of business teleconferencing, which has not been mentioned yet, and we too believe that over time there will be some impact of high-speed rail, but we're not sure, nobody else is either, as to what share of the Chicago market or other markets that high-speed may take from airline service. So, in essence, we're saying that MAC should proceed cautiously, and obviously I think they're very wise in breaking this 20-year plan into five-year segments, but I think it's the responsibility of the legislature to make sure that those five-year plans are carefully reviewed here before they proceed, and that is the essence of our thinking.
Thank you very much. So with that, is there anyone else from the public that would wish to testify before our committee on the MAC long-range plan? Okay. Well, with that, members, what I would like to do is now spend our last 10 minutes or so. If you have questions of either representatives from the MAC or Mr. Saunders, or want to just make comments on the record, you know, we could entertain those now. So, yes, Chairman Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to, Mr. Hamill. I was just wondering if you're, if the MAC is restricted, basically not restricted by legislation or anything, but are you limited basically to consider expansion on this airport because there's no other alternative? And my concern is, I'm sure in the next year or two or sometime in this 25-year period, you're going to have action by a legislature like happened last time, a moratorium or something cutting you off right off in the middle. And I was wondering if the MAC is considering, or not only considering, I'm sure they're aware of it, but the conversations you've heard here again about the alternative airports like St. Cloud and Rochester serving, and combining that with your future planning. Because I'm really concerned that you're going to see a moratorium coming up again by the time you're ready to go. And my understanding, it's going to take 15 to 20 years for a new airport, and that time is gone already, and you're well aware what happened last time.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, let me start, let Denny Probst finish. As far as restrictions on the Metropolitan Airports Commission, one restriction that is established by you, the legislature, is that we are limited to the 7-county metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And as our metropolitan community has grown over time, we've seen more population making greater demands upon our current airport site. So I see that sometime in the future there may be an expansion of next jurisdictional responsibility to broader areas than the primary 7-county metro area. As far as dealing with the outstate airports, we have regular and frequent communication through trade associations and through other groups that we belong to. Minnesota Council of Airports, for example, as one organization, where we meet with the airport managers in Duluth, Rochester, St. Cloud, and smaller communities around the state. And in fact, MAC does participate and work with Duluth and Rochester on air service expansion opportunities, provide opportunity for carriers to provide direct service from Rochester to Denver or to Kansas City, St. Louis, Chicago, and the same for Duluth. We however, do realize the reality, and that is that 97%+ of all the air traffic in the state of Minnesota, as far as commercial airliners goes, does fly out of Minneapolis-St. Paul, and that's because more than 98% of the population of the state lives within a 50-mile radius of the Twin Cities. And as a result of that, that airlines are going to fly where there's a concentration of activity. Mayor Ryback and I have talked about his statewide aviation plan on numerous occasions. And while I think it merits some analysis, the reality is that building multiple airports that would be of the size to handle multiple airlines providing commercial-grade sized airplanes to multiple destinations in a metropolitan area around the state would be very challenging. He mentioned that to build a replacement airport 10 years ago for it to replace MSP was less than a $5 billion project. Recall that they were building the Denver airport at the same time that we were in the study on our dual-track process. And Denver spent $5.5 billion building Denver, and that did not include the acquisition of 36,000 acres of land. So we believe that back then it would have cost us in excess of $5 billion or so to build. Today that price tag is substantially higher. I don't know how you build multiple runways that can meet the capacity requirements of commercial airliners in multiple locations around the state of Minnesota. A runway today that's 8,000 to 10,000 feet is somewhere in the $150 million per runway range, and that does not include terminal facilities and all the other amenities to support airline operations. I don't want to sound negative, because I think creative thinking and I think new ideas are worth investigating and looking at. But since we just finished the dual-track planning process and looked at the capacity opportunities of Minneapolis-St. Paul and have the capacity now to meet our projected growth through the year 2025 to 2030 with some modification, that seems to be a responsible track. Let me turn to Mr. Probst, because he's looked at this very carefully, and we have a staged analysis every X number of years to take a look at how we're progressing and kind of measuring that progress with demands of the community. So I'll let Denny take over.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, Representative Leader, I would also add to Jeff's comments that the path length, it's been 4 or 5 years since we did an economic analysis, but MSP is the largest economic engine in the state, I believe. And the statements that have been made previously about it taking 15 to 20 years to literally start to plan and open up a new airport are correct. It will take that long. And in the interim, there will be passenger service needs for this community that do need to be satisfied. So the reality is that even if that were the selected track, there would be a need for improvements at MSP to satisfy the ongoing needs in between. So we would certainly hope that if we got some guidance in terms of how we were to proceed, that it would not limit the ability to satisfy those needs in the interim.
Thank you. Quick follow-up, Representative Leader, then I'll call on Representative Portman.
Again, Mr. Hamill, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hamill, do you, in your opinion, need legislative guidance or direction like a state airport or airport plan or anything to move ahead? Actually, you're planning way outside of the scope. If you do it on your own, is that your concern?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, no. We actually have the authority given to us going back to our original legislation in 1943 to plan for the long-term development and future of the airport system. So we have all the authorizations that we need from the legislature to proceed with this planning process today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, I think, is there any other questions besides Representative Portman? We'll have Representative Portman, and then we'll give Representative Holberg the last word, and then we have minutes and an announcement, and we'll be out of here by 2:30. Representative Portman.
Thank you. I think it's a pretty quick question, or I have two questions. One is about the funding for the expansions that you walked through and where the money comes for that. And the other question is to Mayor Ryback's point, partially about cargo. Is the issue of cargo severable from the issue of passenger service, and is potentially a way to deal with the capacity issue to move cargo to different airports, like including the Blaine Airport, the Crystal Airport, if we consider those in addition to St. Cloud?
Let me deal with cargo first, and I'll let Denny take the other issue. Regarding cargo, today, more than 50% of all the manufactured goods that go by air to worldwide destinations are actually trucked to Chicago every night. We have approached major corporations in the metro area who manufacture goods that are sent to world markets. Medtronic is a good example. And they have not expressed to us any desire for faster or more improved delivery of those services. They now have, I think it's 24-hour service to Chicago and one-day service after that to their final destination. We've watched this carefully. We've talked with the freight forwarders who basically control this activity at the airport. The Airport Authority has relatively little to do in that mix except to provide the real estate as landlords to accommodate freight-operated aircraft. We have a strong concentration of UPS and Federal Express on the airport. They have their own cargo area on the airport. And the reality is that that there are relatively few operations on a 24-day basis of freight operations, insignificant compared to the overall operation of the airport. So the reason I say it that way is because you couldn't build a new airport or relocate the cargo to some other facility very easily. Again, you have required long runways, 8 to 10,000 feet, 24 to 30 inches thick, and all the amenities that go with it to support the kind of weight and the instrumentation that's required for their operation. They're a very, very small part of MSP's operation. We don't see significant change in the cargo operations at MSP over the next 10 to 15 years.
Okay. You okay?
He was going to address the funding piece.
Okay. Quickly on the funding.
Mr. Chairman, all the funding for the improvements that are proposed will be generated with airport funds as they are today. And those sources are basically passenger facility charges, rates, rents and fees that we charge on airport, income from concessions and parking, and then any airport improvement funds that we might be able to get from the FAA.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, that's an important point. The airport is a public agency that does not receive funding from the state of Minnesota. It's a self-supporting public agency. Our annual operating budget is about $250 million a year, and we do that through rates and charges to the airlines that use the airport, to citizens who drive to the airport and use the facilities. If you're a user of the airport, you contribute to its operation. If you don't use the airport, none of your tax dollar goes to supporting the MSP operation.
Very important point. Okay, and Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if this isn't something you can just talk about off the top of your head briefly, maybe you can just let us know. I'm curious about the dynamics of the nature of the trips with the merger with Northwest and Delta. What percentage of your passengers are just passing through? What percent originate here? Have you seen any drastic change in that? when we talk about, you know, using trains instead of airports, et cetera, how does that line up with the dynamics of the type of passenger service we provide at MSP?
It's a very important question, Representative. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbrook. About 47% of the traffic at MSP is connecting traffic. People who are flying, say, from New York to Seattle on Delta, now passing through Minneapolis, St. Paul, and changing planes, or staying on the same plane but continuing on after a stop. 53-54% of the traffic is what we call origination destination. Minneapolis, St. Paul passengers who are here either because they're doing business here, this is their destination, or they live here and they're departing this point to go back to their home where they came from, or going off to do business and coming back to the Twin Cities. So O&D are the folks that want to be here connecting with folks passing through. It's been about a 50-50 split. We've seen a slight switch in connecting traffic, declining a little bit since the economic slowdown. As far as rail as a competition, high speed, we've actually been to Europe. We've taken a look at and we've ridden on the demonstrated maglev rail systems that are in Germany. The cost is significant, about the cost of building a new airport. Chicago would become, instead of a 1 hour and 10 or 15 minute ride at high speed rail in excess of 250 miles an hour, 360 kilometers per hour, would be about a 2 to 2.5 hour train ride. The cost would be probably more expensive than flying an aircraft, but we do actually believe that there would be a legitimate justification and support for some sort of high speed rail connectivity. That's if there were no stops in Rochester, La Crosse, Madison, going into the Chicago, Milwaukee area. But the rail component needs a great deal of additional study. And we don't believe that would be significant enough to significantly affect the overall desire of people to fly as a primary mode of transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. So with that, members, I'll thank very much the MAC staff and everyone who participated in our hearing. Representative Leader, moving the minutes of February 17th?
Yes, I move.
Okay. All in favor of adopting the minutes of February 17th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, next week we have a joint hearing with the Senate on issues related to distracted driving. We have an important announcement I want to make to the committee, which is we do have a tentative deadline for bills to be out of policy committee, which is March 12th. And so if you have a bill that you'd like heard in our committee, we'll be hearing bills on March 10th, and we'll also be probably using some of Chairman Leader's time in the Transportation Finance Committee to hear additional bills. So we don't have that many queued up, actually, but I did want to just make an announcement to members that if you do have a transportation policy bill, please get it in, because I would like to give I am a chair that likes to give bills hearings, and both parties, and so please get those in if you have those queued up. So thanks very much, and we stand adjourned.